So Jeremy predicted that nanophotonics will become mainstream in medicine within the next decade or so. Perhaps one of the applications will be a system being developed by Nottingham University's Cameron Alexander to deliver and activate nanoparticles in specific cells and tissues. He's with us to explain how. First of all, Cameron, what actually is a nanoparticle?
Well, nanoparticles essentially are any particles that fit in a size range less than a micron. So that's something where you can have 1,000 microns in a millimetre. But it's also important to remember that nanoparticles are actually bigger than atoms. So whilst they're very small, they're actually rather bigger than atoms. But they can be anything essentially on that size range.
And what are you trying to do with them? What's the problem you're trying to solve?
So what we're trying to do with our nanoparticles, we've devised a system where we put together nanoparticles with long chain molecules called polymers, similar to the ones that Jeremy talked about. But we attach those to strings of DNA or nucleic acids, which have a sequence of bases and letters so that they encode for a particular sequence. And what we do, the idea is that we can then use that code to recognize a target molecule inside a cell. And the idea behind that is that that target molecule, which could be something related to a disease, a gene, a signal from a disease, could then open up a nanoparticle and release either a cargo, which could be a therapeutic drug molecule, or a signal, which might be an optical readout or some other response. So you can then use this as a combined sensor and diagnostic, but also perhaps a therapeutic at the same time.
So we have these tiny particles. They have a cargo in the centre, and wrapped around them is some DNA. And you're not using the DNA as a genetic material, but you're using the DNA because it has a specific structure and a sequence, almost like an address. And it can sense if there's another piece of genetic material in the cell the particle goes into. And if the two recognize each other, this makes the particle do something.
That's right, yes. Where we're using the DNA as a code, if you like, a barcode, such that one can have a very specific signal which addresses that particular code. And what we do at the moment, we haven't actually put drugs in the core of these things, but we've stuck the DNA with cholesterol at one end, so an oily molecule, and that causes these long chains to associate together, so there's an oily water-hating core. And then the DNA strands stick out from that, and on top of that we put a covering layer which hides one of the signals, and only when the specific target molecule, either in the cell or in the test tube as we've shown, when that comes in and binds to the other bits of DNA, this opens up the surface of this nanoparticle, revealing a signal or a hook in our case, which you can then have a readout. But of course one could do that to release a specific drug molecule in an exact place in a cell.
So what sorts of signals are they responding to? How is that unlocking process happening, and how could you make it specific for a certain type of cell or a certain type of disease?
Well, there's a number of ways you can do this. What you can do is you can have like a little hook on these nanoparticles, which is exposed to bind to a specific cell. So particular cells and cancer cells are very obvious examples. Sometimes what they do is they produce molecules on their surface, and there are more of those molecules. Sometimes there are particular, what's known as receptors, which bind to particular components on these nanoparticles. And those receptors are sometimes more prevalent in cancer cells. They're a signal of the cancer cell. And so, of course, we could put those markers on nanoparticles to trigger their entry into a cancer cell to deliver a drug specifically to a cancer cell rather than a normal cell.
Can they be safely injected into the bloodstream anyway, these particles?
We've not done that with these particular particles, but there are plenty of other examples of similar base systems where they have been injected safely and they circulate for a long time. So there's no reason to suspect that these would be in any way detrimental.
And if they're not wanted in a cell, then what happens if they don't open up?
If they don't open up, these things would be passive and harmless, and they can be excreted. So, of course, what one can do is make them out of natural components which degrade over time anyway, so they're filtered out by the kidneys. So there are ways in which you can build them from components which will degrade naturally over time. So you have plenty of flexibility, and this is the advantage of using these polymer molecules, is that you can have flexibility in the design to make them respond to the signal that you want to degrade over the time that you want.
And is it likely you could package pretty much anything inside your nanoparticle, or are there certain things which you just can't put in there?
In principle, you could package pretty well anything based on the kinds of chemistries, but of course, as we go back to the concept of nanoparticle size, I think that's something that it's important to remember, because whilst these things are bigger than drug molecules, so you could put conventional drug molecules in, you couldn't, for instance, put in a huge number of drug molecules. There's only a certain amount of space in the core of these systems. And of course, if you want a cancer therapeutic, you want a very potent drug in the inside. And of course, there are other things which are simply too big to fit in.
And if you could address them to specific tissues, apart from just labelling up the tissue to tell doctors or scientists look, this particle's homed in on this part of the body. I presume that means you could direct a drug just to that place, which spares the rest of the body being exposed to it, which
exactly.
would reduce
that's,
side effects.
That's one of the key things, obviously, in cancer therapies, but in other therapies as well, where you want to take your drug molecule to the very specific target, either the cell itself or something inside a cell, a specific location, and therefore not expose the rest of the body to this. So that's a very, very key thing in cancer therapy, but in other diseases too.
And the killer T question, time. How long do you think? Because I think people often find it difficult to understand research timescales. You're at the stage where you're doing this in a test tube. How long do you think it'll be before you've got something you could be putting into a patient?
I think realistically, the kind of things where you develop the materials, you're looking at the kind of 5-year timescale, whether you established safety, whether you've actually got something which is fully efficacious may take a little bit longer. But so I'm obviously hedging my bets on the answer because these things can always take time. But I think the chemistries are there to make these materials. The question is cost. And of course, if something else comes along in the time, which is better than what we've got at the moment.
Kat.
I just had a really, really quick question for Cameron. Is that I've heard that cancer cells tend to really like taking up nanoparticles. Is that true? And do we know why?
Yeah, there are some cases that nanoparticles can target cancer cells. I mean, essentially, cancer tissue is slightly more disrupted than normal tissue. So slightly bigger things like nanoparticles can actually go into the gaps between the cells, and they're not pumped out quite so quickly. So that's why they can potentially target cancer cells in general.
Because there's lots of excitement about kind of nanoparticle therapies for cancer, and it does seem quite a useful property that they do like them.
Yes, indeed. And again, of course, they can carry lots of different drug payloads, so you can have combination therapies at the same time. So there's quite a lot of potential there.
Cameron, thank you very much. Cameron Alexander, he's from the University of Nottingham.